brand isn't about, you know, what I say it is. Brand is about what our customers think and say it is. And what they think and say it is based on their experiences with the brand.
Welcome to the Marketing Expedition Podcast, an auditory journey through the latest in marketing, branding, and advertising. Now, here's your Marketing Expedition guide, Ray Allen.
On this episode of the Marketing Expedition Podcast, I get to speak with Carolyn Walker, and she is the CEO and managing partner of Response, an award-winning independent marketing agency, and she has extensive experience working with top brands such as Logitech, McAfee, Office Depot, Tylenol, and a lot more. Wait till you hear all of what she's done. It's amazing. And she's worked with them to building revenues and maximizing market competitiveness. And she's also co-created the hugely successful branded podcast, Hackable, with a question mark, by McAfee. And we're going to talk all about the importance of using both brand building and performance marketing to make sure that brands can ensure longevity and all the things. So stay tuned for that. But first, it's time for your Marketing Essentials moment, the basics that you need to continue to help you build your brand and your bottom line. So today's topic, I want to talk to you about our journey through email platforms. Email. Hate it, love it, like it, despise it. It's a love-hate relationship. But email is still a viable platform. And I have to tell you, we have gone through so many different platforms and we've worked with different platforms, with our clients, with everybody who has a different platform through the different things that we do after 20 years of doing this, right? We've had Vertical Response, we've had Infusionsoft, we've seen ActiveCampaign, we've seen MailChimp, we've seen Benchmark and Hatchbook, and I can't even think of all of the different email platforms that we have used with either us as Peppershock or our clients, right? And every platform has its beauty and its like demise, right? So all I have to say is if you don't have an email platform, you should. You need to get something that can do some sort of drip system, meaning like if people click on certain emails, then it will send another email out based on their interests, or it'll track the email preferences of what people want to receive or not receive. There's just so much with email marketing that it's just kind of ridiculous, but you got to have something. You got to have something that you can track emails, track your open rates, track what people want to click on and know more about. If you do a monthly newsletter or not, or if you're just promoting your event, if you're promoting a cause, maybe it's, you know, Giving Tuesday in November, or it's, you know, you have an event coming up for your gala, or you have who knows what, right? Email is something that every company has to figure out how to use. And we've navigated pretty much every system, Salesforce, I mean, like every system out there. And there's certain truths to what works and what doesn't. And testing the subject line and testing the byline and understanding how you get emails served to the right folder for people and not sent to spam, and making sure you're not spamming people and that you're not doing things that you shouldn't be doing and that you're having opt-ins and double opt-ins and reverse opt-ins, all the things, right? There's so many things about email. And so this marketing essential moment is just mostly a message to say that if you don't have some type of email system in place, and of course, you know, we've all gotten, you know, emails from people who try to send out messages and we're all, you know, CC'd on a message and it's like spamming us, right? And then it gets sent to spam and it doesn't go anywhere. Anyway, there's a number of things to consider when you're doing email messaging. What that subject line is so critical and so important. And we've got lots of tests messaging, like what the subject line should and shouldn't be. And if you do all caps, that's a no-no. And if you do this and you do that, there's so many rules to follow. They really need to think about your email strategy. Any business out there, whether you're small or big or nonprofit or whatever, or government entity, think about your email strategy, how it's working, what's not, and consistently measure, right? We measure what we treasure, dump what we don't, automate what we hate, all the things. If you need help with your email, reach out to us. Put a comment in or DM us or whatever, or go to hello@themarketingexpedition.com. Let me say that again. hello@themarketingexpedition.com. Send us a message. If you need help with your email marketing, chances are we've probably worked with your platform in one way or another. After 20 years of doing email, there is something that you can glean from. And there's plenty of episodes that I've done with email master marketers in the Marketing Expedition podcast. But just think about, in your strategy, what are you doing with email? Are you getting people to actually open your message, or is it just going straight to spam? Do you even know if it's going to spam? There's ways to tell. So think about your email marketing strategy, because it is here to stay, whether we want to or not. It's something that you need to incorporate into your business. If you haven't already, think about what platform or how you're going to go about it and what you're going to do, and kind of an email drip system that you might use. If somebody clicks on one thing, then they might get another message because they clicked on that one thing. Or if they click on another thing, then maybe they'll get a different message. And how are you structuring your email? And how are you building your email database? What kinds of things are you doing to continuously attract the right kind of customers or potential customers to subscribe to your email? So there's your marketing essentials moment, email. But let's get into our interview, because there's so much more to learn in this episode. Let's go. Welcome to the Marketing Expedition podcast. I'm your host, Ray Allen. I'm the president and CEO of Pepper Shock Media and the founder of the Marketing Expedition community. And today's guest, we have Carolyn Walker. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
Yes. Well, I would love to just share with our audience a little bit more about you and maybe your journey. You said you were an accidental entrepreneur. You didn't necessarily intend to run an agency, but here you are with all this wonderful experience. So kind of walk us through your path. What got you here? What took you to where you are now?
Yeah, would love to give you my background. So I think I have a kind of interesting, maybe non-traditional path to where I am. But it really started when I decided to go to college, and I went to Northeastern University in Boston, which is a cooperative education school. So you go to school full time, and then you work full time, go to school full time, work full time. And so it takes you 5 years to get through. But you end up graduating with a degree and full time work experience. And so that's what I did. And I ended up working for some really amazing brands. I worked for the Sammy Burke, the Basies Group, which was a big research company back in the day. Worked on lots of things like the launch of Teddy Grahams and nice. Pepsi and Coke, you know, kinds of things. So lots of research. And then worked for Kraft General Foods on the Bird's Eye business. Then I worked for Smart Food, which had just been acquired by Frito-Lay, and got some really amazing trade marketing experience. And then my last co-op was with Saatchi & Saatchi Advertising in Manhattan, which was amazing. And I worked on the Finesse Hair Care brand, which was owned by Helene Curtis at the time. And so when I graduated back in the early 90s, you know, the market was kind of tight and was really trying to go to California. But with all that experience that I had with Northeastern, I ended up going back to Saatchi and working on Mylanta, which is was a J&J Merck product, and then ultimately on adult Tylenol, and decided that I wanted to kind of get out of the kind of narrow focus of advertising and go into more, you know, general marketing. And so I took a job with General Mills Restaurants at the time, which is now Darden Restaurants, working on the Red Lobster brand. And it was one of the most amazing experiences in my life, I have to say. It was phenomenal. Learned, you know, like I said, the kind of full 360, like how marketing works. And the organization was very marketing driven, which was also amazing. We were on air essentially, you know, 45 to 50 weeks a year with some kind of, you know, offer. And so, you know, really kind of not only kind of learned promotional marketing, but really they trained me kind of in classically how to become like a really strong brand marketer, and marketing in general. And so that was amazing. And then I, you know, I was living in Florida because they're based in Florida, and decided it was time for me to kind of go home back to the Northeast, and got a job with a startup restaurant company called Sandella's, and helped them grow from nothing to over 100 units across the United States, which was pretty cool in non-traditional locations. And while I never did get my MBA, I feel like I got my MBA with that experience. Learned so much about, you know, everything from raising money to kind of bootstrap marketing, you know, doing stuff with less resources. Like I went from all these resources available to me at Darden to like, you know, next to nothing at a startup.
You create your own resources.
Exactly. So you get really creative, you know, really quickly. And then I left that and I started at Response, believe it or not, as a freelancer. And so I knew one of the founders and they needed some help. And I jumped into account management and helped them, you know, with their clients. And in a couple of weeks, they hired me full time. And then within a year, I was partner. And then within 3 years, I was managing partner. And then I bought the original guys out in 2009. So I've officially been an agency owner since 2009. Yes. And been really fortunate and blessed to work with some really amazing clients like, you know, Logitech and McAfee and Netgear and Amazon Web Services and Uncle Julio's and Savage Burrito. And, you know, the list kind of goes on and on. But really, you know, right now we have clients like Spectrum and Paisano's Pizza and, you know, just really amazing clients. And I'm really fortunate to work with them. And not only me, but we have, you know, just an amazing team supporting us as well. And so I should say that Response, the agency, is what I would call a mini hybrid, meaning that we're, you know, equal parts kind of brand consultancy and strategy group. And then the other part is like executing on that strategy with campaigns, whether they're performance or brand or some combination of both.
Well, yeah, let's dig into that a little bit more about the sort of the difference between the brand building and then the performance marketing and what you really enjoy talking about. Let's hear it.
Yeah. So I have seen over the years of my career that, you know, with the advent of digital and the attribution of digital and measurement of digital, that it seems to me that over the years, the digital component of performance marketing and performance kind of marketing in general has kind of crowded out and stolen from brand building activities. And that's because it's so measurable, right? So you're putting the emphasis and the money on the things that you can measure and understand. Like I spent, you know, whatever, $1,000 on this campaign and I'm getting X amount of engagement or X amount of sales or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I think what has happened over the years is that there has been this shift and also a fight between marketers, right? Like the performance marketers fighting for the budget and the brand marketers kind of being left, not left out, but you know, that they're getting less because it's harder to measure brand building.
Right. It's all about that ROI or ROMI, right? Return on marketing investment. And how, if you can't prove it, then it must not be working.
Exactly. And so, you know, I realize that this is a, you know, an issue. I realize that there's, you know, this kind of tug of war happening between performance and brand. And at my core, in my heart, I'm really a big advocate for brand. And I knew that, you know, brand is a big part of why performance marketing campaigns, you know, work or not. And so what I mean by the two sides is performance marketing is really about attracting that short-term sale, right? It's talking to the customers who are in market right now, you know, for your offering, your service, your product, whatever.
Ready to buy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so it's very kind of narrowly targeted, right? It's just those people who are in market. It's a small percent of buyers. You know, you're targeting them with messages that are probably more rational, you know, more functional, more persuasive. Like it might be a discount or a bundle deal or, you know, something like that, right? Where you're really just trying to kind of get them over that hump and get them to buy. And so you're probably measuring things, you know, on the performance side with like, okay, how much engagement do I have? How many clicks do I have? How many, you know, what's my sales number look like? So that's what I'm talking about, performance marketing. It's like activation. It's also called activation marketing, things like that. On the brand building side, it's usually a more emotional message, and it's about building like and love and salience, right, with your customers who may be in market, but maybe a bigger portion of them are out of market. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's been some research that's been done that basically it's this 95-5 rule, they call it, mm-hmm. where they say that about 95%, and it's not really a rule, it's really more like a heuristic. It's really about like a huge portion of your customers or potential customers are out of market at any given time, and a much smaller percent are actually in market at any given time, right? And so we're really talking on the brand building side about, you know, reaching those people who are out of market so that we can build, you know, that brand connection with them. And so it's a much more kind of long-term approach. It's really about building brand equity, brand, like I said, you know, awareness, like, love, salience. And it's something that if it's done really well, you know, yes, it primes people for future sales, but it also can impact current sales as well, right? And it also does a lot of other things, like, you know, it helps you with pricing and being able to take more price, right? If people like or love your brand, they're more willing to spend a little bit more on it. It gives you a competitive moat, right? Or fortifies your competitive moat so that competitors, you know, it's much harder to compete against a brand positioning than it is, say, a price, right? Or an offer. And it also gives the brand, like it starts when brand marketing really works, it starts to give that brand so much strength and power that it then has the ability to kind of stretch, right? It has more elasticity to stretch into things that might be adjacent or categories that might be new to them. So there's so much great, you know, the great things that happen when you have a really strong brand. The problem is if you don't market your brand, you're not doing that. And so, you know, what's been happening, in my opinion, and what's happened in the marketing world is that all the dollars go into performance to the detriment of brand, right? And you're lessening your ability to kind of grow your sales and your opportunity by just putting everything into the thing that's completely, you know, 100% measurable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, the best you can do is sentiment score, right? On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely would you be to recommend this brand? And it's all based on, like you said, emotion and feeling and not necessarily something that's absolutely finite and you can, you know, put, you know, an actual number to it, right? I mean, there's a difference between that. I'm curious because it used to be said that, and I don't know, this is just a kind of a, like you said, maybe a rule or guideline, like you would have to hear a brand 5 to 7 times before people would recognize it. Now I'm hearing like 11 to 13 times before people recognize it. What do you say when people ask you what do you tell people how many times they have to hear the brand before they even acknowledge that they've ever heard of it before?
Yeah. I mean, that number has definitely gone up and I've heard things upwards of like 30 times.
Yeah.
You know, so it is kind of crazy. I think the thing that we have to think about is, you know, what are all the brand touch points? You know, mm-hmm. it's not just, don't think of it just as advertising, but what are all the brand touch points? So, you know, I think about, say, in the restaurant industry, right?
Right.
All of your touch points include all of your locations. It includes, like, maybe you have delivery vehicles, you have those as, you know, potential touch points. You have your digital presence as touch points. You have advertising and social and like all mm-hmm. of these as touch points. And so you have to be really smart about understanding the full view and where your guests or potential guests are, you know, reaching you or touching you, and what kind of experience are you giving them? Because brand isn't about, you know, what I say it is. Mm-hmm. Brand is about what our customers think and say it is. And what they think and say it is based on their experiences with the brand, right?
Right.
And so what are all of those experiences like? I've worked with many clients, especially in the restaurant industry, where their in-restaurant experience is amazing and their digital experience is not great. And mm-hmm. and that digital experience is shaping guests' opinion, especially many times it's their first perception of the brand, right? Because I'm not going to go to a restaurant and not look them up and understand what they have. And, you know, and so it's a miss. It's a big miss when, you know, you're not considering every single interaction point with a guest or a potential guest or customer. So, well, you know, it is right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It takes a lot. And the reason why it takes more touches now is because we are so inundated, right, with messaging and media and things around us. And, you know, our attention spans have decreased because there's all this stuff coming at us all the time. Mm-hmm. So you're absolutely right. It requires a lot of touches for anyone to even remember. And it makes it very hard for new brands to enter into categories for that reason.
Right. Especially, yeah, restaurants, automotive. I mean, there's lots of competition, and getting through all of that is definitely, that's the whole marketing game and strategy to put together to make sure that you can do that for sure. Speaking
Absolutely
of that, though,
right.
What are some examples that you've worked with brands, and maybe what are some of those touch points, if you will, or, you know, tactics that you took to help build that brand and help then also with the performance marketing side? I mean, walk me through kind of one of your maybe favorite or memorable brands that you helped get through that process and kind of the results from that. And, you know, along the way, just this marketing journey that we're going on. But I would love to hear kind of the ideas or the strategies that you put in place to help grow one of those brands that comes to mind when I ask.
Yeah, sure. I would love to. So one of my, I have an affinity to the restaurant industry, as you can probably tell, especially yeah. given all of my experience at Darden. But one of the clients that we worked with for many years is called Uncle Julio's Restaurant Group, and they have multiple brands, one of which we actually helped them create from scratch. But in talking about Uncle Julio specifically, when they first came to us and when we won the business, they had an issue with their brand positioning. And essentially what it was in a nutshell is that, you know, here they are, this polished casual dining chain, Mexican, obviously. And they were making nearly everything from scratch, but not getting any credit for it. And the research showed that one of the number one drivers of people making decisions of where to go for Mexican was actually made from scratch. So here they are, you know, doing everything from scratch, not getting credit for it, and having this big opportunity to kind of share that made from scratch story. So they repositioned and really honed in on Mexican from scratch. And so then they, you know, were like, how do we now execute on this, right? Like, how do we now take this brand message and get it to come to life and help us, you know, drive guests into the restaurant and improve our sales performance? And so there were two campaigns that I can tell you were super successful. And to me, it's also a very good example of how performance and brand can be married together and work really hard together to drive amazing results. And so the first was they had revamped their menu, and they added all of these new fajitas to their menu. And they did a lot of seafood as well. So it was like super, you know, more high end than a typical Mexican restaurant.
I'm just getting hungry right now by you talking about that. So you know, sorry.
You should.
It sounds amazing.
They're amazing. If you ever get a chance to go to one, you should. They're mostly in Dallas, Fort Worth, Chicago, Washington, D.C. And then there's a smattering of kind of more single unit markets. But anyways, if you ever come across one, go visit. So they added all these new fajitas, and they were like, hey, you know, we've got all these new fajitas, this big news, you know, it's all made from scratch. It all is like, you know, delivered on these sizzling platters. It's a really great tableside experience, which was another thing that was big for us, is to really not just made from scratch the food, but made from scratch, like experiences, right? Mm-hmm. Like every experience at your table is different. And so we did a whole integrated campaign that you know, utilized tactics that were both, you know, digital and immediate, as well as more kind of brand building, right? With mm-hmm. messaging about made from scratch and made from scratch experiences that went in more broad-based, you know, media. Mm-hmm. So it was that combination of broad-based media with a brand message, and then like a more compelling, like, come in now, right, for these amazing fajitas through things like digital and social and influencers, right, and things that were more like urgent. So it was amazingly successful. It turned the entire DFW market around for them, and we proceeded on this, you know, this long-term journey with them. And the second thing that happened that I'm super proud of is they had come to us with a dessert that they created. And I'm like, a dessert for a Mexican restaurant. Like, okay, this is interesting. Yeah. And the dessert, though, was like completely on brand. So think of it. They're this Mexican from scratch concept, right? And mm-hmm. they created this dessert called the chocolate piñata. And mm-hmm. so it was this handmade ball of dark chocolate. And they filled it with fresh fruit, homemade churros, you know, these beautiful ingredients. And it gets suspended on this smallware, on this platter, and the guest is given a mallet, and so this whole thing gets delivered to the table. It's a shareable dessert, right? Not just one person is eating this. It's huge, and $25 or $30. And so the guest is given a mallet. They smash the piñata open, and out tumbles all of this fresh fruit on this platter, and you can dip it in this, you know, these amazing sauces that they made from scratch, and fresh whipped cream, and cinnamon, and it's just beautiful. It's just a gorgeous dessert. And so that product to me was just a huge home run, because it was so, it communicated the brand so beautifully, right? Tableside, made from scratch experience. Yeah. And it was so differentiated and disruptive in that, you know, no other Mexican restaurant, and maybe I would argue any other casual, polished casual dining restaurant or casual dining restaurant was out there talking about a dessert.
Yeah. That's definitely unique. I haven't heard of that here in our area on, you know, more West Coast side. That's a really good, fun idea, and people will talk about, take pictures and socials.
Yeah, that happened. Exactly. People were taking pictures and video and posting it all over the place. And so, you know, for us, it was like, hey, you know, they came to us, and they mostly at the time were doing a lot of radio for their mass. And I was like, listen, this is something that people need to see, not hear. Like, you have to see this thing. It's so unique. It's so amazing, you know, when you smash it open. And so it was the first time that we had done video and TV for them. Mm-hmm. And so we put this thing on, you know, video digitally, like, you know, YouTube and social and things like that. We also ran, you know, a tonnage buys on cable and things like the network. And the thing just went insane. And it not only, like I said, communicated the brand and what the brand is about, but it also gave people like this amazing thing to kind of share and talk about. And we ended up, you know, there were so much activity on social about it that it got picked up by Pretty 52 and Insider Dessert. And we got 53 million incremental impressions by just just having this thing out there. Like, we didn't ask for it. We didn't get in touch with them. They found it and they started talking about it themselves. Nice. And so
user-generated content is beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just an amazing example of, you know, having an amazing product, having, you know, the, by the way, the other thing in the restaurant world, in my opinion, but even not beyond restaurants too, but like having a great product, right, which that was, having great execution of that product. So, you know, being able to operate and get it to, you know, to the guest and like in and be an amazing experience from an operations perspective. And then we layered on really good marketing and it was just a home run. Just an amazing, amazing product launch. I think it's the most successful one that they've ever had. So super proud of that, you know, experience and work that we did with them. Because of that, you know, it, to me, it was like that combination of,
yeah,
it's building brand and building Uncle Julio's and also it had just amazing sales performance. Like their sales just went off the hook.
Yeah, no, I think that definitely, like you said, is it shares the love and users can, or audience, or I guess patrons of the restaurant can share it. And then it becomes that user generated content that gets shared. I mean, that you couldn't ask for a better result. I think that's amazing. And yeah, the idea of taking it from radio, I mean, right now people are listening to this and I'm just like mouth watering right now. You know, if we were to show it, I mean, it would be even more impactful too. So I can see how that is useful to, you know, it's a good story, good case study to share and show for sure. When you were going through that process with the client, like, did it take a lot to get them on board with changing how they were doing things? Like you said that they were doing mass on radio. Like sometimes clients, it just because they've always done it this way doesn't mean it's the right way, you know, moving forward. But I mean, and maybe you have another example of another client, but sometimes it's like pulling teeth to get clients to do what you think is going to be so advantageous for them. What was it like trying to get them to transition? I mean, how was that process for you?
Yeah, I think in the Uncle Julio situation, it was really intuitive, you know, that it just made sense that it needed to be seen versus heard. Yeah. And the convincing was really around budget. Like they just didn't, you know, they're not a huge chain, you know, they're not a Cheesecake Factory. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not a one store operator either, but you know, they were really concerned about budget and like, how the heck are we going to be able to shoot, you know, how are we going to have quality production that marries to their polished casual positioning, right? It can't be something that was just shot necessarily like, on, you know, on an inexpensive camera or something. So that they had concerns about production and then they had concerns about, can we afford the media? Mm-hmm. And so we then presented to them, you know, this option of, we had a friend of our creative director who was a cinematographer out of LA who was willing to do the job for us, you know, like as friends. So we had really amazing, amazing production. So the quality of the film was phenomenal for not, you know, for a fraction of the cost that I had been, you know, the kind of the budgets that I was working with at Garden.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then we convinced them that it was, you know, the other thing I mentioned, I think a little bit earlier about brand marketing is about more breadth, you know, it's less narrow, it's more broad. Mm-hmm. And it was my opinion that, you know, we had to get as many people to see this beautiful dessert as possible. Mm. And so we were less worried about like the quality of the buy and like exactly how it was targeted. And we were more about like, how many eyeballs can we get on this? Mm-hmm. And so that's what we did. We did more of a tonnage play and we were able to get the media really inexpensive. And that's what convinced them to say, okay, you know, we can handle this from a production budget perspective and we can get this seen. Not just, you know, a tonnage on TV, but also on the digital side. And so that combination kind of convinced them that, hey, you know, this is worth a try. And by the way, what happened after that is they completely went away from radio and we just started doing more you know, television, yeah. CTV, video on online and things like that. So it did change their you know, the way they projected forward from that point. So it was, you know, it's an interesting study. The other one I'll mention to you too about convincing clients what to do is this was back in like 2016 or 17. And we had been working with McAfee for a really long time. They're the digital security company, antivirus software, that kind of thing. And when working with them for a really long time, and one of our challenges as security marketers of McAfee is that people are pretty apathetic. You know, they don't, they just put it on their machine or the machine comes with it and they just kind of want to set it and forget it and not have a conversation about security, you know?
Right.
And what we knew from the insights is that your best line of defense in being safe online and with your digital life is to be educated and informed. And the more educated and informed you are, the less likely you are to have something happen to you. And so, you know, I had become a huge fan of the podcasting space when everyone else did with Serial, you know, and and I just, you know, ingested that content and then lots more like This American Life and The Moth and Invisibilia. And like, I just was like enthralled with the medium. Yeah. And so, you know, we had this challenge. I was now becoming like more and more engrossed in podcasting and knowing what the problem was, at, you know, with McAfee and knowing that the best line of defense is education, but people are apathetic and they don't really care. Right. So how do we get them to pay attention? And so I had come up with this idea to do a branded podcast around cybersecurity. And so we pitched the idea to the client without ever having done a branded podcast before, but knowing that the medium could have could be this amazing way to get people to listen to these stories, very entertaining stories, by the way, about cybersecurity. And so they were really excited about it when we first presented the idea to them. And then we had these moments where they were like, oh, well, maybe we should make it, you know, two people talking to, you know, a customer and Matt could be talking to it. I'm like, no, you can't do that. It's going to flop. We need to make this like super entertaining content. And so we partnered with a production company up in Canada and we did a, you know, a strategy session with them. And we came out with this idea to do a podcast that we called Hackable with a question mark. Mm-hmm. And the podcast premise is about the kind of the idea is, okay, let's take hacks that are happening in pop culture. Right. Like, so think Mr. Robot, think CSI, you know, think things that are, you know, you hear in the news every day, right? Like Target's data's breached or whatever. So let's take these hacks in pop culture, put them to the test, Mythbusters style, and then give the audience like these tips and tricks to stay safe. And so the majority of the podcast, like it was, they're 25 minutes long, less than a half an hour. We knew that people, you know, mostly we're listening to podcasts while they're doing something else, like vacuuming or commuting. Exactly. Commutes are half an hour or less, mostly across the country. Mm-hmm. And so we created this amazing podcast and we, before we let it go live, we tested it amongst 300 customers or potential customers. And what we learned in that testing, we exposed them to the brand beforehand, right? And in here's, you know, this, what do you know about McAfee? Do you like McAfee? Blah, blah, blah. Then we played the episode and then we asked them more questions. And what we learned is that people found the content, number one, incredibly engaging. Two, and more importantly, their perceptions about the brand went skyrocketing. Like they loved that McAfee brought them this content. That is like a gift, right? It's like something they wanted to listen to. And we only mentioned McAfee like twice in the whole thing, but they could recall McAfee and their favorability about the brand went sky high. And so, you know, I think that experience was, you know, well, one, it was just, you know, massively successful. Like they had more than 3 million downloads over five seasons. The content is amazing. If you get a chance to listen to it, go check it out. But it's, you know, to me, it was about, you know, they didn't ask for this. They didn't give this to us as an assignment. It was about us really thinking strategically about the brand and how can we get the brand to connect with customers or potential customers in a really positive way, in a new way. And then really guiding them along the way to say, this is the kind of thing that we know is going to work, you know, like, and we proved it with research so that it was, you know, an easy, it was easy for them to continue to say yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I always like to, like when we're trying to educate people, I always liken it to the idea that if you teach them, right, then it's much better than trying to just sell at them and sell at them and sell at them.
Exactly.
And it looks way more, and it's, you know, edutainment, if you will, like you're educating, yep, but you're entertaining, and it's like a lot more pleasing to be able to absorb that content versus just being constantly, you know, you got to buy, and it doesn't work as well. So that's a great tactic. And having that educational component, especially for a brand that people just don't know a lot about or how they could use it or what it is that the brand does and how all of those things, because sometimes people have misnomers about what it is that the product or service can do for them. And so, yeah education,
exactly right.
Sharing that is super helpful. Those are really amazing case studies and stories. I love that you've got so many stories. We could probably keep talking about this all day, I'm sure.
I could go on forever.
But let's just do like maybe one more, you know, kind of short story. What was your favorite project or your favorite brand or something that you do that just like is most memorable, that was sort of off the wall, that you did that worked really well, aside from what you already told us, but what was something, like looking back at all the different brands that you've gotten to work with, what was something that is like, oh, I got to talk about this?
Oh, so interesting. I guess maybe the, you know, there's so many things, it's hard for me to pick. But maybe the other one I think that was, you know, massively successful from a response perspective, an agency perspective, is that I had mentioned a little bit earlier that Uncle Julio's, we helped them launch a brand during the pandemic. And so, you know, listen, like a lot of restaurant brands in the pandemic, their guests drew, you know, they dried up overnight, right? Like there was, they went from doing incredible revenue to basically nothing overnight.
Exactly.
And it was really hard to bounce back from, right? Like, you know, we were changing things every single day. Like, oh, well, the laws in, you know, Washington, D.C. changed now and we can do, you know, takeout and you can dine on the patio. You know,
right. Like mask on, mask off, mask on, mask off.
Like it was changing every single day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, during that time of 2020, they were looking to, okay, we have these huge restaurants, we have all this capacity, what else can we do? And so, you know, prior to the pandemic, all of these kind of ghost kitchens or virtual brands were popping up. And they thought, well, maybe this is a good time for us to try and utilize some of our capacity and create a new brand that gets operated out of the Uncle Julio's kitchens. And so they came to us and like, we want to do this burrito concept. And the reason why I want to do burritos is there's no burritos on the Uncle Julio's menu. We don't want cannibalization, but we want to be able to use like similar ingredients and things like that. And so like, okay, this makes a lot of sense. And they said, well, we think we want to call it like Burrito Bob's and we want it to be millennial and Gen Z. And we're like, well, hold the phone. You know, that's not the right name if we're really going after a different audience. And so we really had them like, you know, like let's take a pause and let's really think about what we're trying to do here and what this new brand is all about. And so we have a process that we call brand lucidity, which helps our customers, our clients with any kind of brand problem that they might have. So whether it's brand portfolio strategy and management, or it's brand repositioning, or if it's brands, you know, developing brands from scratch, like we apply this process to it. And so that's what we did for them. We said like, okay, let's take a time out here. Let's really try and understand, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with the brand, like what's the purpose of the brand, you know, what's the why, how do we want to position it, you know, who is that right audience, and not just, you know, broadly Gen Z and millennial, what is it about them, you know, what are their motivations, their fears, you know, their things like that, really understanding audience. And then ultimately coming up with a positioning that would make sense and be non-competitive to Uncle Julio's and distinctive from other, you know, burrito concepts out there. And so we took them from, you know, essentially an idea to a full-fledged brand, which we ended up calling Savage Burrito. And by the way, the name came, you know, it's Savage is a term that's used in millennial and Gen Z vernacular, you know, and mm-hmm. savage meaning it's really cool, it's good, it's awesome. And you know, there's songs about, you know, that use the word and whatnot. And so we came up with all of these different kind of brand names that fit with the positioning and whatnot. And then again, we tested stuff. So we tested like what's resonating with that audience. And that's what we came up with. And we did, you know, a ton of work on like I said, you know, the positioning and what's the brand kind of, you know, mantra, and then creating all of those, you know, branded materials and experiences around it. And it was, you know, the Choco Piñata was, I think, the most successful thing they've ever done. And I think Savage Burrito was probably the second most successful thing that they had ever done, and really
from
helped
Bob,
them.
Bob Burrito to Savage. I think that's,
yeah. Like says it all, right?
I love it.
Amazingly successful and brought extra revenue into the company, right? In this really challenging time.
No, that's a, you know, like they all said, the pivot, the pandemic pivot. So that was a good way to go to get their name out there and still be able to utilize the sources and come up with something. And yeah, everyone had to figure out new ways or die basically during
exactly.
that time.
Exactly.
So just real quick, what are some of the resources or, you know, maybe podcasts that you listen to, or where do you go to get your latest and greatest information that you can share with others? Because people are always looking for resources to tap into. What are some of your favorite places to kind of stay on top of industry, or just what are some places that you like to go visit or hear or listen to?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think number one, well, you just heard I'm a huge fan of podcasting and listening mm-hmm. to podcasts. So there's a great podcast out there called On Strategy. It's amazing. Highly recommend going to check that out. I also do a lot of work in the B2B space. And so I follow the LinkedIn B2B Institute quite a bit. They have amazing research and materials around B2B marketing, and they're really just doing some phenomenal things, and they're a little bit like a think tank, you know. So they've mm-hmm. aggregated all of this information and kind of put it in one place, and so great materials there. I would also say, you know, I am a subscriber of Ad Age and Ad Week and Brand Week. I mean, those are kind of the, you know, the standard, you know, trade publications. And then the last thing is, which is really important to us, is we're a member of the 4A's, which is the Association of Advertising Agency. It's the American Association of Advertising Agencies. And it's the largest trade organization of its kind. And so we belong to that, and we participate in forums that are amazing. And so we have a group of, like, I don't know, there's like 8 to 10 of us right now in this one forum of other agencies that are about our size. Nice. And so there's a lot of, yeah, learning that happens there. And then the other thing I'd say about the 4A's, there's two big conferences that we try and attend every year. One is the MPF, which is the Management Practitioners Forum. So it's like, again, all of the agency or a lot of the agencies that are in the 4A's go and, like, they have, you know, sessions about, you know, operations and employment and like all these things that you think about as an agency owner. And then the other one is StratFest, which happens every fall in New York City. And that is all about kind of, you know, marketing and advertising strategy and how to tap into, you know, consumer insights or, you know, cultural insights and things like that. And it's just an amazing, amazing conference.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I just, within the last couple of years, got more involved with the 4As. I teach the National Student Advertising Competition class at Boise State. And so part of that is becoming a member. And I've dabbled back and forth with it. But now I'm like a full-fledged member. So I'm going to have to get a little more involved, not just from the, you know, professor side of things, but from the agency owner side. And I love the fact that you get together with other agency owners. I did do like a forum like maybe a year ago. And yeah, like that you meet, and that was just a 6-month stint that we all met together. And it just was great to hear from other agency owners, what they're doing, what's working, what's not working. And then be able to give back to say, here, I, you know, after doing this for 20 years, here's some things that I did that worked and here's what didn't work, you know, for us.
Absolutely.
Good to hear from other people that are in the industry. And it's not necessarily, you know, you're not necessarily competing against each other because you're in different parts of the country. And or even if you are, you know, just getting those ideas of what's working or being able to collaborate. And that's one thing that it's kind of like a residual side effect of, you know, there's some things that we do that other agencies don't do. You know, you're heavily into restaurants and hospitality and in those particular areas, you know, and we do video production and some agencies don't. And, you know, so it's kind of, it was a fun way to, and it was like unexpected because I just thought, oh, other agency owners, there's no way I'm, you know, this is not a business development thing that I'm going to get business from, but it inadvertently happened anyway. And we got to partner on some pretty cool projects with other agency owners that I never would have thought that we would do. And so I think that's great that you are getting that forum and knowledge from other owners and that you have so much to offer to them too. And it's a great way to stay on top of industry and knowing what the challenges are that other people are doing. And it was good for me too, because I could ask questions that maybe other business owners in my area that are not agency owners would have, you know, they didn't have a clue. So
yeah, it's an amazing, like amazing safe space to be able to share like the good, the bad, the ugly and get support and, you know, sounding boards, whatever. And so our forum meets twice a year in person, but we also connect just through like Zoom calls, like once a month. Nice. And so it just is, yeah, it's just this amazing kind of group. And of course we can reach out to each other individually or whatever as we need it, but it's kind of like, I feel like it's kind of like having like a board almost, you know, without having a board, because it's these people who really understand your business. And like you said, you know, can offer practical advice or recommendations and, you know, things like that. And so I found it extremely helpful. And it's just an amazing service that they give to you as part of the membership.
Definitely. I'm going to have to check into that. Thank you for bringing that out.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, for listeners that are either in the industry or not, I mean, it's good to be in some sort of association that's within your industry so that you can, you know, get those collaborative ideas from other owners that are like-minded and going through a similar path or something that's, you know, a challenge in your industry that everyone's facing, that then you can, you know, you know, conquer the world with, right?
Right. Exactly. Well, one last point about all of that is that, you know, I'm a big believer and, you know, listen, COVID did change everything. We all went so virtual and less in person, but I am a big believer of taking some time to go to conferences and things like that, or like to me for the, you know, the Jade Forum meetings and whatever, because I think you're kind of sadly mistaken if you think that you can get all that information in the quality of the information by sitting behind your desk, like, and, or within your four walls. Like it is just, there's something so powerful about going in person and connecting with people who have, you know, either like-minded or similar situations or people who have like really radically different ideas. Like it's just so invigorating. Every time I go to a conference or a meeting, I come out being like, I am like, it was hard to do it, right? Because you have to give up your time and you got to, you know, totally. You got all this work to do and you got clients on you. But, you know, it's hard to do. But at the end of the day, like when you come out, you're like, wow, I'm so glad I did that.
Yeah.
And, and you're just like refreshed and inspired and like ready to go and have great new ideas, you know, as a result.
Yeah. Now I get to go speak at the National Association of Broadcasters every year in Las Vegas, which is always fun, right? Vegas is always fun.
Yeah.
But same thing, you know, like when we had to do it on Zoom, I've been speaking there for about 7 years now. And when we had to go on Zoom, it just like attendance dropped and people weren't paying mm-hmm. attention. And it was just like, why am I doing this if you're not even going to pay attention to me, right? But then when you're in the room, you have a captive audience, you can network, you can build those relationships. And it's just so much better in person. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all. It's just, it's a different experience. I think it's too easy for people, like you were saying, to not pay attention in the virtual space, you know, versus where you're there.
And
distractions. Mm-hmm, exactly. People checking their email or their phone or whatever, right?
Yep. Yep. Well, Carolyn, how can people get a hold of you? And, you know, is there any last parting words that you'd like to share?
So to get in touch with me, you can certainly go to our site. There's contact, you know, information there. If you want to, follow me on LinkedIn, it's Carolyn at Carolyn Walker. It's pretty easy. You can also shoot me an email, Carolyn@response.agency. I'm always, you know, willing to chat to anyone about anything, especially as it relates to some of the topics we talked about today. And I would just say my last parting words is think of marketing and advertising as an investment, not an expense.
Ooh, I love that. That's so true. Well, thank you so much, Carolyn, for joining us today and sharing all of your nuggets and just wonderful stories that you had to share today.
Thanks, Ray. It was really a pleasure being on with you. Appreciate it.
And for those of you listening, feel free to share this with those you know that need to hear what Carolyn had to say today and give us a review. Those are the best things that you can do for us. And until next time, everybody, enjoy your marketing journey.
Thanks for listening to the Marketing Expedition Podcast. Want to continue the journey? Don't miss out on new episodes. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Wouldn't it be great if there was one place you can go to get all the latest information and tips about marketing and advertising? The Marketing Expedition community is that place. People like you gather in our online community to build relationships with others and find the latest marketing trends, tactics, tools, and technology. We help you build your brand and your bottom line. Start your adventure today. Visit themarketingexpedition.com to find out more.